Hello and welcome to Transmission. Today, Q is joined by Alexis, CTO at SynchroStore, a company developing pumped thermal energy storage technology using low-cost materials like recycled glass. In this episode, they discuss how thermal energy storage works, how it targets longer-duration wind-dominated markets, and why diversifying beyond lithium-ion batteries could be crucial for energy independence. As always, if you're enjoying Transmission, please feel free to like, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now, let's jump in. Hello, Alexis, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Quentin. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So we're doing this podcast because we met on LinkedIn, right? Someone posted something, maybe even me, and that was controversial to you, I think. And then we ended up talking about it and saying you should get on the podcast. So let's start there. What was that?
Yeah, I think you made a comment on one of the podcasts about how, I guess, the UK government is spending money pretty widely on many different things, which probably don't all make sense. And I think you made a tiny comment about a company using some weird glass. And I thought, oh, that must be us. We must be the weird glass people. So I thought, oh, I'll poke Q just in case.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't you guys at all. I actually wasn't poking at anyone. It was more just a comment on UK research innovation in general. My belief, as I said in that thread, is I just think that startups especially, it can be very attractive to go and get money from the government rather than money from customers. And I think a startup's number one job is to learn as fast as possible, way faster than the competition. And the best way to learn is to spend time focusing on the customer rather than the government. But I get it that some technologies need a bit more help. But yeah, that's where that came from. So let's get straight into it then. SynchroStore. You're the CTO at SynchroStore. Most people, I would hope, if they're listening to this podcast, are very familiar with lithium-ion and pumped hydro. But thermal energy storage, we don't talk about much. So can you just walk us through what thermal energy storage is? And then let's talk about SynchroStore and what your company does that's special.
Yeah, so I guess pumped thermal energy storage is a way of storing energy. And I think we can use it to store electricity as form of heat. So we use different types of media to store energy as heat. And we use heat pump, as that's the pumped thermals. We use heat pumps to create that heat and cold energy. We store that in different types of material. And we use a heat engine, to be very, very simple, to extract that energy and generate electricity. And the benefit of pump thermal is that with a heat pump, you kind of have a higher coefficient of performance in the charge mode. So that gives you a coefficient of performance of 1.5, 1.6, 2. And then that gives you a round trip efficiency around 50 to 70% is quite typical for these types of pump thermal energy storage. And I guess the big benefit against battery energy storage is the really low cost of energy. So the material we use for storing energy is really, really low cost. It could be even waste material. You can get paid to use that material. So the differentiator against battery energy storage is we have a relatively high cost of power. Our power modules are quite expensive, but we get much cheaper at longer duration. So it tends to be a curve where, same as pumped hydro, above 8 to 10 hours, pumped hydro or pumped thermal energy storage will be cheaper than battery energy storage. And that's because battery energy storage tend to have a relatively high energy cost relative to these other technologies. So yeah, so that's pumped hydro in general. There's many different forms of pumped hydro. There's many different ways and flavors. You might have heard of compressed air energy storage. So that's kind of one type of Carnot batteries, they're called. So you store compressed air, but also some heat. You also have liquid air energy storage. So you store some of the energy as formed as a liquid nitrogen, but you also store some heat that you can bring back in the circuit. And thermal energy storage just focuses on heat storage. So there's no storage of compressed air or compressed gases. And there's different benefits of doing that, pros and cons of using different architectures.
And so I imagine a lot of our listeners will be thinking, and me as well, the first thing that came to my mind is we often come across companies and technologies that claim to be cheaper than lithium ion, And, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, I remember we had Marek on, friend of the podcast, who was the face of Fluence at the time. And we were talking about long duration being longer than 4 hours. And there were a number of technologies that claimed they were cheaper than lithium ion for longer than 4 hours. And that's crept up to 8 hours. And then you just mentioned 8 to 10. And it feels like with the cost curves becoming so aggressive on, you know, it just keeps on getting cheaper, lithium ion cells. And they're already produced at scale. The question is lithium ion really more expensive than other technologies right now at 8 to 10 hours? And then if you fast forward that to, you know, when you're on a technology S curve and costs keep on coming down, you know, where is that limit? Is it 10 hours? Is it 15? Is it 20? And I know that a lot of our listeners who are in the lithium ion world would say, well, lithium ion may be cheaper, maybe more expensive than pumped hydro, even, for example. It's a ridiculous example because there's so much duration there. But these long duration systems right now, but you can see if you skate to where the puck is going, then surely everything is going to be lithium ion, would be like a fundamentalist lithium ion person response to this. And so when you talk about synchrostore's technology being cheaper than lithium ion, what do you mean by that?
And I think we need to consider different markets. So from my point of view, the battery energy storage and lithium batteries are perfect match for a solar dominated market like California and Texas and part of Australia. And that's because the amount of the duration of storage required by this market is going to be in the range of 10 hours. And then you'd be able to cover 24 hours of generation through most of the year using battery storage and solar. But in wind-dominated markets like Northern Europe and UK and Scotland in particular, there is no solar production pretty much in winter. There's 4 months of absolutely no solar production. So then you have this market dominated by wind production. And the problem of wind generation is that they have these cycles of long generation, about 2 to 3 days, this weather event coming in regularly. So 2 to 3 days of wind and 2 to 3 days of almost no wind. And that's where we're going to need longer duration than what is currently being deployed in the market. And from our perspective and the analysis we've done, we think we're going to need around 24 to between 24 and 48 hours of storage are going to be competitive in the market. I'm going to be able to absorb this excess electricity from wind generation and provide it back to the grid for this duration. So battery energy storage are going to be cheaper at up to 10 hours and probably even longer. But if we consider duration of 48 hours, then the benefit of this really low cost of energy becomes quite powerful. We actually use some of your data from some of the curve you've compared yourself with pumped hydro. And I mean, we're still a long way from having a fully developed product, and we make a lot of assumptions, but we're probably half the capex cost of battery energy storage at 24 hours. So the curves are kind of crossing around 10 hours, but at 24 hours, we almost have the price of battery energy storage.
But not yet at scale.
No, of course not, yeah.
I'm aware this probably feels like walking into the lion's den, right? Because my job to figure out, because we have lots of folks that we talk to either on and off the podcast working on different technologies. And there's a range of qualities out there for these technologies, some that make sense and some that don't, right? And I mean this with the greatest respect, but it is difficult when one claims that a technology is cheaper than lithium ion, but not yet at scale. There is a gap there. And I know that's a time in market thing. It's just going to take some time. But it's not necessarily like for like when one is in market and operating at scale. One of the things you mentioned there on solar output. So solar output, you mentioned that Scottish solar output is there is no solar output in the winter, right? But I thought we should probably check this out. But I thought it was somewhere around 20-25% across the winter, which still is much less than in the summer, but it's not zero.
It's not zero, but the demand in winter is also going to be much higher as we yes, electrify yeah. As we electrify heating. So if you consider, okay, fast forward 10 years from now and we've electrified heating, then the demand in winter is probably going to be almost double what the summer demand. So therefore, the solar production to go to match this demand is just not going to be there. And wind, on the opposite, is much higher capacity factor in winter. So a lot more production in winter, so much better match than solar. So I doubt that significant amount of solar would be deployed in Northern Europe or or the US, because wind is just going to be more competitive. That's my view. Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon you'll be surprised. So let's talk about your product then, PTES, the pumped thermal storage. So what does this thing look like? You know, if we're thinking about a grid scale asset here, I guess that's where you guys are headed. What does a 50-100 megawatt one of these things look like?
Yeah, and that's actually one of the places we want to differentiate ourselves from other technologies. So most pumped thermal and liquid air and compressed air need to be very large scale. And that's because they use off-the-shelf turbo machineries, and they tend to be more efficient and cost competitive if you go in the 100 megawatt, 200 megawatt. We are developing actually the core technology of SynchroStore is not pumped thermal energy storage. It's actually we're developing our own reciprocating compressor expander. And I guess it's analogous to the difference between a gas turbine and a reciprocating gas engine. So we're developing the gas engine of the equivalent to gas engine. So we tend to be a smaller scale. The first demonstration we're deploying will be a megawatt power module. And we expect in the short term to do about 2 megawatt per 40-foot container of compressor expander system. And we would basically stack containers and power modules to increase the power level. And we actually believe that in Europe, particularly, there's a large number of smaller scale sites. Of course, in US, Australia, there's huge storage site with hundreds of megawatts of power. But we think there's actually a market for co-location of storage with smaller grid-connected assets such as solar farms or wind farms, small wind farms, and also industrial users, which would require smaller level of energy storage. And of course, this again comes with an impact in the capital cost. But we think we can provide additional revenues if we manage to collocate with distributed connected distribution grid connected assets. So we're not targeting the very large scale systems. We think other technologies are going to be more suited, but we're targeting a distributed connected asset.
Okay, and so we said 2 megawatts is roughly a shipping container, and then where is it stored? So where's the energy actually stored?
The benefit is that the power module and the energy storage are completely decoupled. So in our case, we expect to store our energy. We're actually moving our material. That's one of the aspects we decided to do. So we're moving our storage material from ambient pressure silos. So one is insulated at high temperature and one is at ambient temperature. And those would look like farm sheds, very large farm sheds. And if you want to increase the energy storage, you basically make a larger shed, and connected to this is your power module, which uses the storage material and transfer it from the hot storage to the ambient storage. So yeah, it will be a power module and some sheds.
Who's a customer? Who do you guys serve?
We're still developing the technology and looking for partners, but we're aiming for solar farm developers. And actually, we've been talking to a number of developers, and the interest is by co-locating long duration storage with a solar farm in the UK, you can actually expand the installed capacity or the capacity of the solar farm for a given grid connection. So we've calculated we could increase the solar farm capacity by a factor of 3 for a given grid connection. So what we expect is that there's going to be a big market of because of the grid constraint and availability of grid is to use existing grid connected solar farm and expand them by a factor 3 and co-locating energy storage. And not all solar farms are going to be available, but quite large numbers could be expanded relatively easily. And long duration storage would enable this. So increasing dramatically the revenue of the solar farm.
For a solar farm, so what duration battery then are you guys thinking about putting on solar farms?
So based on the model, and of course we need to keep learning, and the market is evolving, but we see an optimum at 24 hours at the moment of collocation of storage, and about the same ratio of like the power level of the grid capacity in terms of in for the storage. So if we have 15 megawatt grid capacity, we have about 15 megawatt of storage and about 50 megawatt of solar farm connected to this.
Right. Okay. Cool. So then let's talk about the technology itself then. So you where does the energy go? It's been stored in, you said there's a few different materials that you can use. Which is the best? What's the performance of that material look like?
Yeah, so we're actually using glass as our storage, and we actually glass beads. And there's a few reasons for in terms of performance of the system. But the reason we chose glass is we expect to be able to use quite a large amount of waste product from the recycling industry. About 20% of glass can't be recycled and it's just used as aggregate. So we expect this could be a good starting point, a good starting material for the technology. But we could use other types of ceramics, for example, which could be made relatively cheaply. But the glass is our starting material and the one we use for our testing at the moment.
So we can put this into perspective. Just thinking about heat pumps in cars and on houses and that whole compression cycle is very efficient in transferring energy, right? So what's the round trip efficiency of a thermal energy storage system with a heat pump on it?
So I think there's a number of existing system on the market, and we've got some simulation model and some ideas, but we haven't tested, but we expect around 60% is possible. So round trip efficiency. So the cup of charging is in around 1.9 on the hot saw, and the discharge power, which is very, very similar to what you have on gas turbine, is about 30%. That's kind of the maximum. And you get a number of losses around the system that you have to really optimize to improve the round trip efficiency. And your compressor expander is the one of the main loss in pump thermal. And because we're using reciprocating machine, we actually have fairly efficient compressors.
So one of the businesses that we've come across, and actually I really respect, is Tepio. Have you come across Tepio? They do thermal energy storage for domestic, but they have, rather than a compression cycle, I'm pretty sure it's direct. It's like they call it a zero emissions boiler, which is it's quite a rudimentary way of a heating element, I believe, and then a thermal mass. So if you have the option of using a heating element or you have a heat pump like you guys have got, what's the difference there? Why did you choose to go down the heat pump route? I guess the benefit of Tepio is they're smaller systems for domestic, so they look and feel like a boiler, and you would stick them in a house like a boiler. But for grid scale stuff, it's a different kind of scale and problem.
Yeah, so we in charging, you will have a cup of one, and so basically your maximum round trip efficiency will be 30% if you use thermal energy storage as direct electric heating as your starting point. So 30% will be really start impacting your the value of your system. And because you actually need a heat engine to discharge your power, you actually need the infrastructure to generate the electricity. And in our case, actually, that's a big differentiator for our technology, that we can use the same powertrain in both directions. So our technology can be reversed, or the same powertrain can be used as the heat pump and the heat engine. So we don't have an additional capex basically to go from charge to discharge, and that's actually quite a big differentiator of our technology. So we expect for a 1-to-1 per kilowatt, our compressors will be more expensive, but because we only need a single powertrain to do charge and discharge, we think it will really help our value proposition against other types of pump thermal storage.
Okay, cool. Do you want to tell us a bit more about the company then? So who's involved in this, and how long has the company been going? Who had the grand idea to do it in the first place? And what projects have you got on at the moment?
So as I mentioned, the technology evolves from an idea used for hydraulic. So I've been working in developing reciprocating or radial piston machines for about 15 years for the hydraulic market. So the company was called Artemis Intelligent Power, and we actually developed a wind turbine transmission, a 7-megawatt wind turbine transmission, fully hydrostatic, and we had two demonstrators in the field, and it worked very well. And then the company was actually bought by Danfoss Power Solutions at a later stage to do something completely different. So we actually applied the same technology to the mobile market, so excavators and things like this. And our technology is much more efficient and controllable than existing hydraulic machines. So we can save about 30% energy on excavators. And basically we are applying the same concept, and actually a large part of the team working on this hybrid machine as I move to SynchroStore. So we have got quite a lot of experience of developing this radial piston machine. So instead of pumping oil, we're now pumping gas, which provides its own fun challenges. So working at very high temperatures and with gas is completely different. But we've got this experience of bringing a technology from low TRL all the way to TRL9 with Danfoss. And I think that's one of the strengths of SynchroStore. The company, the idea I just started about 7 years ago by Professor Wim Rompen. He's actually professor at Edinburgh University, and actually he saw this opportunity to apply the technology to energy storage. And about 3 years ago, we received this big contract from the from DESNZ, from the UK government, to develop this megawatt scale demonstrator here in our facility in Scotland. So we finalized the first phase of the program, and we now have actually a demonstration of our compressor. Our heat pump is now fully operational. So we have a test rig at 200 kilowatts working in the lab, and compressing happily, making heat. So that's actually quite positive. And what we actually decided is to focus a lot of the team on applying this technology, this compressor technology, to the industrial heat market. So that's actually two different streams the technology is applicable for. So the energy storage part with pump thermal, but we are basically a very efficient high temperature heat pump applicable to industrial applications. So we actually spending a lot of resources, and as you say, really trying to hit the market as quickly as possible to in the industrial heat market. So that keeps us busy at the moment.
All right, and so Aldes, so you had a contract with Aldes, you've got your demonstrator project, 100 kilowatts, which I assume is in, did you say in Edinburgh?
It's a 1 megawatt. Yeah, so the pump megawatt. Thermal is designed for 1 megawatt. The first test rig, the first iteration is a 200 kilowatt test rig.
Okay,
and
cool.
It's all based in Edinburgh. So we have a pretty cool facility. So the office, the workshop, and the test lab all in one place in Edinburgh.
All right, well, we should put some photos and links in the show notes. If you want to check this thing out, go and have a look. And let's move on to where the company's headed then. So we've got a couple of 100 kilowatts test rig, and now I assume you're out of the prototyping phase and into the commercialization phase. So what does that look like for the next 5 or 10 years?
I think we're still we say we're about TRL6, so that means that we have a fully operational demonstrator at scale in a representative environment. So the next stage is for us to continue maturing the technology. So actually working on our product development program to bring this technology to TRL 7 and 8, and in parallel work with customers. So we're actually looking for customers. So if anybody is interested in high temperature heat pumps, they can get in contact. Particularly interested in drying application is what we're going to focus on at the start. Yeah, and so the aim for us is to reach TRL 7, 8. We will start pilot production in the next 2 to 3 years to start ramping up the sales in 2 to 3 years. But capacity to start demonstration project and first of a kind in as soon as next year.
All right. Well, wishing you the best of luck. Let's move on to, is there anything that you want to plug before we move on to your contrarian view?
Yeah, I suppose I've plugged already quite a bit, but we love having people coming around and seeing what we do. So we're not a PowerPoint making company. So we've got this test rig now working, and we're starting to broadcast a bit more, hence my visit here to the podcast. So it'd be interesting to get people to get in contact and learn about what we do. Yeah, contrarian view, I guess maybe linked to what we said earlier, is like the cost of battery is going to keep going down, but there's also a small risk that the price doesn't. When we see that the production is dominated by a single country, the whole value chain is dominated by China, there's a small risk that the margin made by the Chinese suppliers will increase and slow down the reduction price of battery energy storage in the near future. But I agree, we can't stop physics, and things are going to get cheaper as you move forward. What I expect is that we can track it and be competitive at this longer duration with our system.
So is your contrarian view that over time, the cost to produce batteries, lithium-ion battery cells, will decrease because, I mean, it has to, right? I mean, the amount of overproduction, the overbuild of production facilities of lithium-ion cells in China is breathtaking. Mm-hmm. So these battery cells have got to go somewhere. But I think, are you saying your contrarian view is that the Chinese manufacturers or the government could bring up the drawbridge and then increase the margins to the export market?
I think that's a possibility. And I think that's why I think governments like the UK need to diversify. We need to have different options. We can't just rely on one single technology. I think that's quite dangerous, particularly if you don't control the production of that technology. So I think having a number of options on the table, I think will be quite useful for the UK government.
I guess in the spirit of our introduction on LinkedIn, in that same spirit, I mean, there is a possibility, of course, that happens. Personally, I think it's pretty unlikely, but there's a possibility. But then there is a case, as you say, for governments and economies that are ex-China to diversify their supply of energy storage. But I'm not sure about the leap from that assumption or thesis, the leap from that to other technologies that don't demonstrate better performance.
No, of course.
It would be like saying, like, South Korea is going to be the biggest supplier of LCD TVs, right? And so we're worried that they're going to increase margin on LCD TVs. So what we need to do in the UK is start producing, I don't know, black and white TVs. Yeah.
No, I totally understand that. But I guess if nobody invests in R&D and new technologies and new ideas, and also technology which plays to the strengths of our economy. So the reason I think China has moved to making electric cars and batteries is that we were too competitive in Europe to make engines, petrol engine and diesel engines, and they just leapfrogged us and went to a completely different technology because they couldn't compete. And maybe this is actually one of the strengths of European countries and the US is to manufacture these reciprocating machines. And actually what we're offering here is looks very much like an engine. So actually an ideal partner for us will be an engine manufacturer wanting to diversify and look at an alternative for their production capacity. I think as a society, we also have to be mindful that we need to preserve some jobs in our countries, and we can't just export all of it to other countries. But I guess that's as you say, sometimes it's like a good discussion at the pub, so we can continue that.
We should do this over a beer.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
And I think that's the problem. Like we're not sure what the future will bring. So we need to diversify. We need to have other options on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope that you can probably tell that I've sort of made my mind up that lithium ion is going to take over. And this might be me taking this is you could be listening to this and say this is Q talking his own book, which you know is a fair point. But I've sort of made my mind up on that, but I'm open to change it. And I hope I'm wrong. And I hope that the synchrostore technology really takes off and you get from technology readiness level 6 to grid scale. And yeah, I mean, more energy storage jobs in the UK would always be a good thing.
We'll have the beer together in a few years to discuss it.
My argument is, well, yeah, let's build some lithium ion plants, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a very tricky thing to do as well.
I think it's probably too late to compete with the Chinese manufacturers there. I would think that's going to be difficult.
Agree. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. If you listen to this and you want to find out more about Synchrostore and their technology, then head to the link in the show notes and find Alexis on LinkedIn and follow them and keep up with their progress.
Thanks, Quentin.
Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here and love your podcast too. Keep it on.